This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, space mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole deck of galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. You can't get just one. Okay, so that's not like some marketing hyperbole. You literally can't get just one. They come in twos. So like, if you want just one, you're going to need to find a friend who loves slow-roasted chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch sauce. Or a friend of a friend, or have an awkward conversation with a complete stranger to see if they're obsessed with chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch. Or you could just like eat them both because you're obsessed with slow-roasted chicken, bacon. Okay, you get the idea. The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. At participating Taco Bell U.S. locations for a limited time while supplies last.
Welcome to the Michigan Wild Podcast.
We're just here walking around. We're going to go set a tree stand. Don't worry, my dad's weird. He never shot a huge buck.
I just shot a freaking big buck.
Hit him. Go get that one, Henry. Prayer.
Size of that deer.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. I'm back. It's been a good week. It feels like it's been a while since I recorded an episode or anything, but it's only been a week. That's what happens when you, are busy. And busy is an understatement. So hopefully everyone's having a good week. Had a good weekend and are looking forward to have a good week here on this Monday that this is coming in on. Got a lot to talk about, kind of. Kind of a big announcement, not huge, but an announcement. So I just got done running the dogs, ran my beagles just by myself, actually. First time this year I've actually had an opportunity to run the beagles. Usually if I'm by myself, I just take Frank, the German, or not German, what is he? Wired hair pointing Griffon, a.k.a. Big Dummy. out for a walk, but no, I was able to take the Beagles, and I shot a rabbit with the 410 pistol, the Rossi Brawler. Been trying to do that all year, and it's actually the first rabbit I've shot this year, and that's for a couple reasons. I've been carrying this camera around, trying to learn how to film and do it a little better, and I think today, potentially, you might see some footage of this, because I feel like I actually got some decent stuff and actually was holding the camera while I shot. You know, one hand holding the camera, one hand holding the gun, kapow, and I think I got them. So, to be determined on how it will turn out. I haven't looked at the footage yet. However, the reason I'm bringing all that up is that the reason I'm carrying a camera around is because me and Adam Miller from Bowhunter Chronicles, Joe Davis from Generations of Hunt, Jake Bergheis, which you've heard him on the Bowhunter Chronicles or maybe a few other podcasts here more recently, and Brad Collins. Bradley Collins, us as a group came together. We kind of became friends the past year or so and decided to, instead of all of us having our own YouTube channels, we kind of were like, let's just combine and do, you know, a group effort and just kind of help because we all got jobs. We all, you know, have other things where three of us have a podcast we got to do. And we just hit it. We all hit it off. Good group of guys. So we did start it. We're starting a channel. I believe it's live. Instagram and Facebook is live. By the time you hear this, it is Rome. And it's Rome Hunt on Instagram and on Facebook. And then I don't think we have the YouTube channel up yet, but I'm assuming it's going to be Rome Hunt. So if you want to catch some of that stuff and some more video side of things and, you know, kind of give us some support, that'd be great. I will have that link in the show notes. And if you go on my Instagram page, you can see some of the stuff that's been shared on there. But yeah, it's pretty exciting. So I think I got some, you know, rabbit hunting content. Hopefully, as we close out March, I'll have some more that we can kind of create, like maybe a little video out of it or something, just because just doing the same thing the podcast is, right? Just trying to be as realistic as we can and, you know, express the desire and the passion we all have for the outdoors. And, you know, that's why I do a podcast, because I just love it. And Rome, you know, just the name of that kind of came up with just sitting down and talking. I was like, what do we want to do? And Rome is an acronym, and which is kind of cool, kind of came up with an acronym for it. And you got real, opportunistic, adventure, and mindset. And I think that really fits really well with the group of guys we have. We're like just going to keep doing this and see how it shakes out. But we'd love your support. I mean, like, there's just a plethora of stuff out there, right? YouTube is saturated with a lot of hunting stuff. But this is something we kind of want to do. You know, we're obviously, none of us are professionals, but we want to put some high quality stuff out there and have the mindset of always trying to get better and just be a well-rounded, you know, channel just filled with, I mean, chasing rabbits, chasing whitetails, chasing turkeys, you know, like anything we do from a year to year basis, do that. I think I'm going on the pig hunt again this year. It's coming up really quick. Actually, I think it's the end of March. I'll be doing that. And I'm going to have a camera with me there and try to get some more filming and do that. Just kind of, you know, bring you guys along for the journey on that. So that's Rome Hunt on Instagram and Facebook. You guys can go check that out and give that a follow. Really appreciate that. But yeah, it was pretty exciting getting the 410 brawler killing a rabbit. So there was more shots fired than one, but hey, I got him. And I think I actually shot I've shot a rabbit with a 410 pistol before. I think back in either high school or right after high school, I shot a rabbit with the 410 Judge, and I think it was the smaller Judge. So there was like two different Judge pistols, right, revolver, and I think my dad had the smaller one, but I ended up shooting that with a personal defense round, and that's why I ended up getting that rabbit with that. And what's kind of cool is actually I shot these two rabbits not too far apart from each other, essentially in the same block, different properties, but I guess both my pistol kills, well, 410 pistols have happened there. So it was cool to get that. The dogs ran really good. The weather still has just, you know, it's getting better, but the snow is, we have had a stretch of just terrible snow and conditions for like a month almost. Not necessarily like not trying to complain or anything like that, but our dogs, you know, we don't hunt them multiple times a week. So when you hunt them once a week, yeah, they do. We build up a tolerance a little bit with their pads and their feet, and you know, they're not like the world's best beagles by any means. However, when you have all this ice and like new snow on top of ice and they run and you go for a couple hours, maybe 2 to 5 miles, their feet get shredded and they'll bleed pretty bad. And so we've had to call some hunts pretty, you know, early because of that. We haven't really hunted more than one spot this year. It's essentially we go to one spot, hunt that, and come home. So it's been a little shorter sessions. and their feet are just always bleeding. So like today was another day where there's just, you know, a lot of snow had melted, and where the snow was all gone and melted, they hammered, they did really good, they ran rabbits. But every time we found that icy, crusty snow, it was really difficult for them to figure things out. And, you know, their speed was way down, you know, tracking them on the GPS. They were doing really good the first, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. And then once they got into that, those bottoms that the snow just hasn't melted all the way and they're trying to navigate ice, they just slowed way down. And, you know, they can see where they've been because their pads are all bleeding. So, you know, cut it short. They only went about 3 miles and, you know, call it quits for the day. But it was still a good day. I'm looking forward to, which is, it's kind of weird to say, but I kind of want all the snow just to melt and be gone. And then we can run them a few days doing that. And if we get another snow shower too, like maybe that'd be fun. But this ice has just been, it's been brutal. It's tough on them. So. But still, we're still going strong. It's been fun. It's been a good rabbit season. Had some plans that I wanted to do with some more guys. It hasn't really worked out all the way. It's crazy hectic. You know, schedules, trying to do things. But I'm still hoping to get another hunt or two in with some other people that I haven't hunted with before and try to make that happen. All right, this week's episode is with Kyle Kuntz from Real Obsession. Hopefully I say your last name right. Kuntz maybe is the right way to say it. He is a guy that I just happened to find one of his YouTube videos on YouTube. Me and HD were just, you know, it was either early in the morning, I can't remember, or late at night before bed, was just scrolling through, and I was like, oh, Lake Cadillac, I know where that is, a guy ice fishing. And, you know, his title and his, you know, screenshot or his, sorry, title page picture got us, we're like, let's watch that. And me and Henry watched it. And then I did a little digging after that. I was like, oh, I kind of like this, his passion. You know, he's excited about ice fishing, something I have zero experience in. And, yo, reached out on, you know, social media, and next thing you know, he's on a podcast. So it's pretty cool. He is, you know, young. He's about 10 years younger than me, so a decade, you know, which is crazy to say. But he's in his early 20s, 24, and he, like, kind of trans, you know, heard his experience into the fishing space from a competitive side. And it's something that I've seen, and, you know, I know some other people that do it, so it was really good conversation. It was a real, like, transparent conversation about going about doing that. And I think it's kind of cool. Like, he went to college, and he actually fished in college and, you know, did those kind of things in high school. He convinced his school, whoever that was on the board or whatever, to, like, have a fishing team. So he kind of spearheaded that and then, you know, did the, so he fished at a very high level, competitive level for a long time. So it was, like, really fun to, like, pick his brain and talk to him about that and then also talk about ice fishing. And the more I watch, or the more I kind of invest in, like, learning some things about fishing, there's some really, like, solid parallels between fishing and, you know, chasing whitetails in the woods. So it's interesting to hear that. You know, there's technology involved. There's all these things. So we kind of break into a lot of that stuff. We didn't really get into much of the nitty-gritty, like, tactics or, like, what kind of poles to use, which I think those questions will come the more I, like, experience it, because he could be like, yeah, use this, this, and this, and I would literally have no idea what any of that stuff is. So, but it was still a great conversation. And we talked about some whitetails too, because it seems like the last, I was watching some of his videos. He's got some whitetail videos on there too. But yeah, you guys can check all that stuff out on his YouTube page. It's Real Obsession, R-E-E-L Obsession. And it's good. It's good to see a local guy. We live really close to each other, which is crazy. This is the first time I've seen any of his stuff. You would think the algorithms would be like, hey, there's a guy close to you that's in the same area. Like, you should see this stuff. But have not. So thank you, Kyle. It was a fun conversation. I look forward to, you know, continuing that relationship, and I'm sure we'll be doing some more podcasts here in the future. So keep doing what you're doing. It's good stuff, and hopefully you guys do enjoy that conversation we have. I just want to touch on partners here really quick. I have the Vitalized Seed micro plot. Where that plot, the one of my plots is positioned, there is, you know, sun just, it is the inside corner and the sun just beats on it. So the snow all melted. And once that snow melted, boom, deer and turkeys instantly on it. And it blows my mind there's still, like, stuff for them to eat. That's why I just love that carbon load mix so much. It just seems to do a really good job of, you know, helping out wildlife for extended periods of time throughout the year. It's not just like this 3-week period or this 2-month period. It's literally like half the year. So it's kind of, I like to go out there, and when we shed hunt, like, I pull some of my cameras and shed hunt this location, and I'm really going to, like, look to see what the heck is still left, because I don't know what could possibly be left, but it is, and there's turkeys and deer in there. on a daily basis. You know, daylight, night, morning, evening, they're moving through, right? They're not like staying there for long times because it's such a small plot, but they're still munching on stuff. So that's pretty cool. And then just, you know, talking about Vitalized Seed, get your pre-orders in for any of the stuff that you want to do. Check out their new revamped website. They got these bundle packages and stuff, and I really hope I can lock down an episode with either Jared or Al here in the future to kind of go over some of that stuff from Vitalized Seed. And then we have Wildlife Legends Taxidermy. Say every week, top-notch company. I mean, you see guys are starting to get mounts back already. I mean, that time of year is coming. I can't wait to see Henry's deer from this year. And, I mean, it's just like another cycle, right? You kind of like get to see that thing again. Henry's excited. So check out Wildlife Legends Taxidermy. If you have any taxidermy needs, shoot a spring turkey. That's a great place to go. And then also want to talk about DH3. Once again, I rabbit hunting today, found some scrape locations and potential trail cam spots, and already thinking about mock scrapes. So if you do your springtime scouting, do your shed hunting, don't sleep on mock scrape locations for your cameras. And if you want to try something different instead of just taking a whiz in the dirt, you want to support a local Michigan guy, try DH3. All right, guys, that's going to be it. Oh, and with this warm weather, if no one's like jonesing to shoot their bow, tell you what, I got the itch. I am hoping to launch some arrows this week downrange. But hey, you guys know what to do. Make sure you get out there. We'll get this thing rolling. It looks like it is. All right. All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. We are going to take a little different course of action tonight. I'm sure we'll talk about whitetails because this guy likes to shoot some whitetails too. But I reached out to Kyle Kunst because I came across a YouTube video and it was him fishing some lakes that are not too far away, or northern, you know, north of Grand Rapids lakes. And you had a YouTube video and me and my son were watching it and he was pretty intrigued. And I was like, all right, hopped on the phone and I reached out to you and here you are on an episode of Michigan Wild. How's it going, man?
Yes, sir. Glad to be on. Thanks for having me. Doing nice. Well.
What's your YouTube channel again?
It's Real Obsession, R-E-E-L, Obsession.
So. Nice. Yep. So that's where I found you on Instagram and do all the social media stalking. And yeah, yep. You accepted a podcast. So I do appreciate you doing that. So why don't you give us a little backstory, like do a little quick overview, how old you are, you know, where you live in the state of Michigan, that kind of stuff. And then we'll get ripping.
Yeah. So I am 24 years old, graduated school 2 years ago. I went to Grand Valley, fished there, which I'm sure we'll get into later on. But I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, grew up in Walker, so north side of town, and just bought a house and got married last year. So now in right between Comstock Park and Sparta, so north side of town still.
Yeah, we're close because I'm in Sparta, okay. Kent City. So
oh nice.
We're close. So we probably you fish from sure a lot of the same areas that I know of, which is kind of cool. But
yeah.
Let's kind of focus on fishing here before we get into whitetails. Cause like everyone knows me, I freaking love whitetails. So fishing for you, is that something like you loved at a young age, or like, I guess, did you have a grandparent or a dad that was like crazy about fishing and you just like, cause you kind of alluded to like this fishing thing, you went to college and you fished in college. So I think it's a pretty cool thing. So me as a guy who's like, you know, primarily stuff in the outdoors with a gun in my hands is always, or a bow. But the fishing things, like I like the thought of it, but like, I never got into it seriously. So I love talking to people who are like really enjoyed doing that kind of like, cause I think it's another good avenue for young kids or people to get outside and enjoy it. And fishing is like, if you're in Michigan, man, there's lots of lakes, lots of rivers, all that stuff. So
absolutely.
Kind of give us your backstory on fishing.
Yeah. So I'd say I started fishing, I think I was 4 or 5, and it kind of started from my grandpa. My mom's dad has always been into it. I don't even really know how he got into it, but has always just been diehard into it, has just an absurd amount of tackle, and just loves all that stuff. So he got me into it originally. My dad's always liked fishing, nowhere near what I've done and how my grandpa liked it. So grew up kind of with my grandpa and my dad taking us out. They had a place up on Lake Leelanau. So we'd go up there a couple times throughout the summer and go out on my grandpa's boat. And I think the first fish I ever caught was a walleye, which was pretty crazy. So caught a couple walleye that first time. And then just kind of like, I never got really into it as a young kid. I just grew up fishing with my dad here and there, mainly walleye. And then as years progressed, like, like I said, I would do it for fun, never like thought I'd get into tournaments at all. And then getting into high school, started playing sports and always been a really competitive person. So then I kind of like didn't even know fishing tournaments was a thing back then in high school. And then all of a sudden that was rapidly growing around that time too, in like 2016, 2017. And then I went to a small Christian school and they didn't have a team. So then kind of got with our AD and created a team, if you will. It was just like three tournaments a year, we'd go out and run them. So that was my first ever crack at it when I was like, I think I was a sophomore was my first one. Fishing out of my dad's like walleye boat, like no graphs, none of that stuff. So that was how I got like kind of cut my teeth. Obviously sucked for a couple of years. And then as I did a little more, just being very competitive, like, and liking fishing, those two things, like all of a sudden I was like, holy cow, what is this? And then I started taking it more seriously. I'd say like senior year, end of high school. And then always knew I kind of wanted to stay around home and go to GV. And then I did some digging into fishing and they have a really solid team. And so then joined there. And that's when I really dove like headfirst in. I did it, like I said, a little bit through high school, but my dad never fished any tournaments. He really didn't fish a whole lot. So it was pretty much all self-taught. And a lot of it was through YouTube, which kind of inspired me to start my own channel, which is like, I think I started that mid high school, just kind of as a joke with my buddies. And then just kept consistent enough to all of a sudden get monetized and then start making money. And I love it now because me and my buddies always look back and just talk about like, oh yeah, we can go watch that trip we took 6 years ago. And yeah, like the video sucks, but it's good to have.
And you remember, you can remember.
Now,
and
you're yeah, probably it's, watching it's, it, you, yeah, you relive the thing, you relive the tournament, the trip. So glad I started. It kind of started as a joke. And then, like I said, decided to go to Grand Valley and freshman year dove in like full-fledged tournament fishing. Before I ever got there, I ran out to Mississippi, fished the Mississippi River, and literally got last place. It was like 50 boats, 50 teams. It was invite only. And me and my buddy went out. He was quite a bit older. So I'd never fished any college tournament, anything. And then all of a sudden there's dudes from like Bama, Florida, Texas, all these like hammers that fish normally like that. And we got last place. And right then I was like, okay, like that opened my eyes, like, holy cow, this thing is crazy once you get on the national level. And then I wanted to start getting good. And then going into my freshman year, COVID hit at the end of it. And that's when I just like dove in because we didn't have classes in person. So we were just fishing a weird amount. Like we'd go to Muskegon or White or Grand somewhere, like almost at least a couple times a week. And that's where it was just diving in. And then into my sophomore year, got quite a bit better. And then junior year, senior year was pretty competitive, won a couple tournaments along the way. And yeah, I fell in love with the smallmouth like side of things. I don't, largemouth are okay, but I love going up north and like chasing really big smallmouth. I'd say that's like my forte, if you will. Definitely don't do as well like fishing for largemouth on the Grand, but if we can go up north like Grand Traverse or something and get on some clear water chasing the smallmouth, that's my favorite way to catch them.
Nice. So that was my next thing. Like, first of all, do you remember, I have a walleye story that I kind of remember, but do you remember catching your first walleye or like doing
I actually do. That's what's crazy is it's crazy that I caught a walleye of my first fish.
Your first fish, it seems really weird. Yeah.
Usually it's a bluegill
or something. Yeah.
I have a picture of it and I remember like fighting it and I was like kind of pissed at my grandpa because I was like, dude, this thing's going to pull me in. I'm like, you got to help me. He's like, no, you got it. And I got it somehow, but I think I was 4 or 5, but I do remember it.
Yeah. The only time I remember catching a walleye, I may have caught more, but this one memory sticks out. I was in Boy Scouts and we had our like camping trip and I have no idea where it was. I'm sure my dad probably remembers, but I remember all the kids are in the water swimming, having fun. And I'm like, I always liked fishing as a kid. Like I did a lot more fishing when I was younger, like before I could drive and before, you know, I got older, but because I live really close to a lake and my uncle fished and grandpa's fished, but I remember being on this trip and it was a camping thing and a guy had a fishing pole and I was like the one kid off to the side fishing where everyone's having fun. Like I'm catching a fish. Yeah. Everyone's like, you're not going to catch anything. You're not going to catch anything.
Yeah.
I was using some sort of like a lure of some sort, a crankbait maybe. I'm not even sure what it was. And I caught a walleye and I remember just being so enamored by that. Like, what is this fish with like teeth and like,
yeah,
everyone's like, I can't believe you caught that, you know, kind of thing. And that's the only wall. I think that's the one and only walleye I've ever caught
really?
In my life.
But I was going to say, that's impressive from shore. That they're hard.
Yeah,
to
it was from
shore.
That's what they all said. And you know, chaos is going on. I don't think we were, I honestly have no idea where we were, but I remember the seeing it. And you know what's funny? It might not even have been a walleye, but just my brain tells me it is. Who knows? But that is the one thing I remember. Now, that's pretty cool, like doing that. So when you started getting into tournament fishing, or you know, get, I think it's kind of crazy that you started it, like your school even have one and you're like, hey, we need to do this.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's, there had to be passion to back this up, because
for sure,
when you go and you're last out of 50 and you see like, holy cow, like this is legit. These guys have been doing this their whole life. And it sounds like you didn't really come from that. You kind of had to like morph into that. So like that challenge, I guess, what made you kind of like settle? So smallmouth bass was kind of your thing, you said you did for the tournament fishing.
That's where I've done best and what I like the most. But
there's not like a lot of good smallmouth places like close to Grand Rapids area. So you're having to travel to do that.
Yeah. I would say like coming out of the national scene, like I said, I actually I fished that one in Mississippi, and then the first one of my freshman year, we went down to Toledo Bend, which is a massive reservoir. Like, we don't have lakes like they have down there. Like these are like, I don't even know how big, but like so enormous that like each creek arm of this lake is like a Muskegon lake. So there's like 15 Muskegon lakes, and I've grown up just fishing a little bit, and then I come down there. So I decided to go down there in January. I've never fished anywhere like south of really even Michigan or Indiana, and drive 20 hours down with my dad's walleye boat without a graph, and fished out of a walleye boat. I was the only one without a bass boat. And that was when I was like, holy crap, this national thing is like hyper competitive. Like you said, most of the kids that are in that do not come from, oh yeah, I fished a little bit with my dad out of a walleye boat. Like every single kid had like a $40,000-$50,000 rig and was like, we didn't get last, but we didn't do good. Like, I think we got like 120th out of like 250 teams. So they're massive tournaments on these huge bodies of water. And that's when it's like, you think you're all right at fishing until you go to one of those down south on a reservoir you've never been to. You don't know anything about the fishery. And yeah, it was crazy. So that was the first one of my freshman year. And then we did, I think, one more in Alabama that year. And like I said, it just like, the more you do it, the more you learn on your feet. You learn how to fish these lakes and how to break them down in a couple of days of practice. And by the end of my senior year, I think we'd qualified two or three times for the national championship, which was, you had to be top 25. So top 25 out of 250 with all those dudes that can catch them is tough. Like that's tough. So we qualified, we came up to Saginaw and we qualified two times there. And then I think we might've qualified on Smith Lake in Alabama. And Norman, we had a couple like top 30 finishes, and I know we're close on a couple. So by the end of it, I started getting competitive, but the first couple were like, holy cow, this is like totally foreign.
Yeah. So you had quite the, I mean, in a short amount of time, you went from, like you said, taking this like approach of like, I've never done this before, to a short time later, a few years, to like, hey, you're like competitive. Like you're actually like producing. Is there any like, I mean, I don't know. I know a few people who kind of do some tournaments. Was there anything you kind of like learned in that amount of time? Like, did you become did you upgrade technology, and were you able to use technology better because you fished the hard way, you know, hard way quotation?
Yeah.
So once you did you upgrade some equipment that really helped you get in the game? I mean, cause like for me, like I go fishing right now, I got an 86 bass boat. I don't have a fish finder, nothing. I'm just going to lakes and, you know, I'm having fun. Like, and that's kind of what I feel like you probably did starting out, you know? So I mean, that's kind of that's like why fishing's cool. Like, you don't really need all this stuff to catch fish, but also if you want to be competitive, there's some, you know, things you got to add to your arsenal to, you know, get you in the game.
Yeah. So that's funny you say that. I was just talking to a buddy about that, and I think learning how to fish without like having a good bass boat and having good technology and like literally just being out of like a tin rig and just like you have to learn how to catch fish regardless of if you have live scope, if you even have side scan. Like, I didn't have any of that stuff. And like all the best fishermen I know, like throw a couple names out there, Lucas Murphy, he's a couple years older than me, fished with me for a year or so, Cooper Jett, and then like Mitchell Gunn and them, like Ian Van Vliet, even like all those guys grew up either like kind of walleye fishing similar to me or just out of like a crappy rig. Like, none of us had these dads that were big tournament guys or had the technology. Like, if you can learn how to catch them, and then like, so I was learning and like getting decent in like 2019, 2020. And that was right as LiveScope was coming out and that huge push. So I was like, I got good by the time I got LiveScope, and then all of a sudden you get LiveScope and you're like, well, this is game changer. So yeah, I'd say that I think we got that like my junior year. So towards the end, I'm all right with LiveScope, but I think I learned how to catch them before, which actually helps you. Cause then if you learn how to like break a lake down without just like going out there and scoping around, then you can get a little better and put the pieces together. But there's plenty of guys my age that just grew up with scope and a bass boat. And like, if you take scope away, I don't know how they do, but
yeah. And I think that's a good point. Cause I was fishing in a lake this summer, lake I fished a lot growing up, and we were getting out for the day, and I remember going around, and we didn't catch a lot, but we were just having a good time, and I could just see tons of fish. Right. And I was like, oh man, this reminds me of when I was a kid. Like there's a lot of fishing here, probably because the ice fishing had sucked for, you know, last couple of years, but old boy was rolling up by himself. He's like the guy that's got like this older boat. It's aluminum, pretty big. He's like got everything figured out, right? He backs the boat in, got the rope ready. He unloads. He gets out of the vehicle, grabs the rope at the perfect time, you know, sets it up, and he's got live scope. And I was like, dude, what do you think about that? And he's like, I am absolutely lethal with this. He's like, all these lakes I've been fishing for my whole life. He's like, I know what to do. Now I can just be like super efficient. He's like, I know right where to go. And so like, to me, I was like, yeah, that's like kind of like these OG guys in the whitetail space. Like they learned how to hunt really, really good and use like old school maps and stuff.
Yeah.
And once they figured out how to get Onyx on their phone, they were just on fire because they're like, oh my gosh, I know. So I think it's like kind of that thing. You kind of got to, so I think sometimes when you like bring new people in, like for me, there was the, like, I was like, I could buy like whatever boat, like when I was looking for boats, I was like, I don't know what to get. Just took some recommendations from some friends and stuff. And then I started asking about like fish finders. Like I've never used one. And they all told me essentially like what you just said, like you don't really need that stuff. Like just go out there, have fun, catch some fish. And then maybe if you like it in a year or two, you can find some used stuff and then slowly build it up. And it's like, yeah, that's a lot of fun. Like it makes sense. Cause it's like, I'm not doing this for a living, right? We're just trying to have fun. And I think that is like, now that I'm understanding, like, okay, time of year, I'm finding bluegills here, I find bass here. Like, granted, last summer was my first summer, but like now going into this summer, we can actually have a game plan. Like, hey, remember we were catching fish this time last year over here in this depth? Like, learn those like small basics, and then I throw like a fish finder or something into the works. It's like, okay, I'll actually like know what to like,
yeah,
how to use it, or like what kind of how it can help me, I guess, is how I look.
That was kind of, I should hit on that too. When I was like I said, right around COVID when we were fishing a bunch, and I was still pretty new to it, but like learning really quickly, that's how I did it. It was like, I remember we went out to Muskegon, and I'd fished a couple tournaments through high school out there, but like always just like go beat the bank, like crankbait or anything, like just beat the bank. And then it's like, okay, there's a lot of offshore structure on Muskegon. So then COVID, we started just pounding a couple humps out there. And the first time I ever did it, like I was just idling over some stuff, like with a 2D, I should see if I can find it. With like not even, it didn't even have side scan, a super old graph, and like it was marking all these fish. I'm like, there's no way that's right. And I was with my buddy, and we like flipped around, and I just threw a blade bait out there because I was like, I think that's how you catch them early. It was like 40 degree water temps, and then we caught a couple, and then all of a sudden it was like, okay, you expand on that. So it was like, for me, it was about like finding a bait that I knew that worked early spring, like cold water when the fish don't want to eat. It was like, okay, I know blade bait works. Then you get really good with one bait and you're like, I know a blade bait can catch them April, even earlier sometimes, like March, all through May. And then once the water heats up a little bit, then you find that next bait. And that's where it was like, then I got pretty decent with a swim bait. And then you pick one bait and you get all right at it for each time. And like you said, then it just repeats itself. It's just like hunting. It's like, okay, I know I want to be around the oaks like first week opener. Then I know I want to start looking at scrapes, and then it repeats itself. So once you get okay at all of it, it's like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So that's where it was like, I just focused on one bait. Like I remember it was the blade bait was the first one. And then I got pretty good with that. And I was like, this is stupid in the spring and the fall. And then it was like, okay, they warm up, they get a little more active, pick up a swim bait, start chucking that thing. And then you can get into jerk baits and pretty much whatever else as it gets warmer and their metabolism starts speeding up. But once you put it together once and a couple times, it just starts repeating itself. And you're like, ah, this is fun. I feel like I know what I'm doing a little bit at least.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Then that fuels the fire, right? Like you have the desire and you're seeing success. So you just go a little bit more crazy on it. I mean, like anything, any competitive guy, any sports guy, it's like you want something clicks, you're like, oh, I'm fully invested.
Exactly.
So I do have like a, just kind of stay on the realm of like competitive fishing here a little bit. So is the mindset like I have to find a big fish, or is it like if I catch enough of them, I'm bound to like catch a big one? Like when you tackle,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's interesting. I would say it totally depends on the fishery. Like largemouth, I would say more of like you want to be around like a lot of them. I don't even know if that's true, but it's a mixture. So I could say like up north on certain bodies of water, I'll say Saginaw Bay, for example. Like the two times we qualified out there, it was June, mid-June, early June. So there's basically two players out there, like half the field went for largemouth. There's really good largemouth fishing all over the bay, in the river. Like you can catch them, like lots of them. They're good ones too. They're like 3 pounders. So you could get pretty much 15 pounds and we knew we could do that, but it's like, we're going to try to qualify or win. We're like, that's not going to do it. So we knew we had to run 50 plus miles round trip to go out to find the smallmouth. So in that tournament, you're gambling on like getting out, being able to get out in the waves and stuff and go find those fish and then catch them, versus mm-hmm. like a couple of our buddies went and tried to qualify in largemouth. And you just need like magical days to do that. You'd have a ton of fun and catch a bunch of fish, but you're going to come back with 15 pounds and we'd come back with 18 and be able to like jump 40 spots or whatever. Gotcha. But then there's different tournaments. Like for me, at least, like the Grand is like, I don't know the Grand that well. So for me, it's like, that's more of a numbers thing with largemouth. Yeah. It's like, just either flip or punch something or go fish like seawalls. And like, the more you catch, like there, some lakes, they're just more mixed in and you don't really know. Mm. But then if you're out there like scoping and fishing deep, like, I mean, you can have an idea how big those fish are. That's the other thing that forward facing sonar has changed so much. Is like, you can like, you catch a couple fish and you can go look at a few out on humps and be like, oh, those are probably 1 or 2 pounders, or oh, those might be like 4 pluses.
Yeah. So it's like, I'd spend time. It's almost like a trail camera. Like you get a cell cam pick of a big bug. It's like, all right, I'll invest time in this area.
Yeah.
When before you didn't have pictures, you'd be like maybe bouncing over or trying to, now it's like, and it could probably hurt you, 'cause like maybe there is like really big fish there, but if they're not biting or you can't get them to bite, like you just may have wasted your opportunity to go catch a bunch of other fish. So like, I kind of like get the game. It seems like there's some good parallels from like, you know, sport fishing and, you know, whitetail hunting. But yeah, I hear guys talk about it and like, you know, they're finding the big fish and it's like, I mean, I've fished before. Like, I feel like it's a complete, like, you know, I gotta be like hitting the lotto to catch a big fish, right? Yeah. Like I just like catch enough of them and hopefully one of them is big, is kind of how I've always been.
That's what's tough to like explain to like my girlfriend or my wife's now family and like anyone that just doesn't fish a lot. It's like, oh, that's just, not that it's stupid, but it's like, oh, that's just luck. And it's like, it just really isn't. There's definitely a part of luck, maybe I think 20%, 10%. Yeah. But it's like, until you go like really fish a lot of tournaments, like, yeah, you always have a chance to catch a freak, just like kind of lucky, but like there's so much more like mental, I don't know, there's more that goes into it, skill and like just setting yourself up with a game plan. Like another one for like,
yeah, put yourself in position to be lucky, right? Like that's why my dad always, you know, told me too, because I'm like, I'd shoot a deer and he's like, oh man, I was like, man, I just got really lucky. He's like, no man, you did all the right things to put yourself in position to get lucky. And I think that's kind of like, I think that's anything in you know, competitive way, you get to put yourself in that position with hard work or you know, learning a skill, or like you said, like spending the time like getting good at something. And then between the eyeballs is an important part of it too.
Yeah. Another one, going back to your tournament question, like for some lakes like Muskegon Lake, for example, like I've never loved summer tournaments out there. So like, and it's tricky sometimes when you don't know if you're going to be able to limit for sure, like get your 5 fish. A lot of times what we'll do is like, all right, we're going to go catch 5 largemouth to fill our limit. We know they're not going to be big, but hopefully we can catch 10 pounds, all 2 pounders or something relatively quick in an hour or two. We'll fill the limit and then we'll go smallmouth, like hunt for big smallmouth the whole day. Mm-hmm. And that way it's like, if you can fill your limit first, there's your strategy to like at least be middle of the pack and then go hunt for bigs all day, rather than I've done it opposite where it's like, we're just going zero or hero and go sit in the channel all day. And then you have one fish at one and you're like, well, I probably should have filled my limit. So it's a fine line.
Yep. And that probably helps to have like the right guy doing that, you know, your partner, right? Like, I mean, you guys gotta be, the dynamic to that's gotta be, you're stuck on a boat with them the whole time, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's not like you can just get away from each other. And I mean, I'm sure there's innuendos and, you know, guys getting pissed at the other guy, 'cause you know, you're a team, and it's just, you see the dynamic and you hear about it. It's like, yeah, that's fun. I mean, it's a cool thing, and I do think that I don't know if it's gaining popularity, but I feel like I hear more about this kind of stuff, like people fishing more and, you know, spending time in that. Maybe just because I'm actually like paying attention to it now that I have a kid that wants to fish and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a fun sport, and I love those kind of things that, and like we'll roll into ice fishing too, because the reason why I think ice fishing is really cool is the same reason why I love small game hunting. Like, I can bring new people into the space very easy and fishing. Like, if you got someone that's never experienced outdoors, it's really tough to beat a June day out on a pond or a lake with a bobber and some worms and have to catch some bluegills. Like,
yeah,
talk about getting someone in the experience. And I think that's why this is going to be a good thing. And, you know, if you're a guy like me and, you know, got a young kid, like, right, and he's expressing interest, it's like, let's go catch some fish. Like, I'll give, like, I don't know, maybe he'll want to do something like you did growing up, or maybe he'll be psyched out on, you know, fishing or ice fishing. I don't know. I just, like, you want to give your kids as many opportunities to get outside and not sit in front of a TV or, you know, be on an Xbox or Minecraft or whatever their thing is, you know.
100%. So
it's cool. Yep. And I kind of, like, feel like I maybe have, he's going to be 9 here pretty quick. So, like, obviously still got time, but it's like, man, maybe I should have pushed fishing a little sooner because he expresses a lot of interest. But it's like, dude, I got to learn too, man. Like,
You
know, I got to kind of learn as I go.
That's what's been cool. Like I said, my dad isn't super into it. He's always like, we've walleye fished a couple times a year, but like, he didn't know much about bass fishing. So then to be able to kind of like learn with him and like help teach him, we went out a couple times, like, towards the end of my college years or whatever, and he was just like blown away. He's like, how do you know there's gonna be fish there? And I'm like, you do it enough and like you can just like hunting, like you're like, oh, there's gonna be deer using this bedding area, or just stuff like that. You just, it's all about confidence. That's all hunting and fishing is, in my opinion, a lot of it,
for sure. Okay, let's roll into ice fishing. So we finally have ice in Michigan this year. How has your ice fishing season been so far?
It's been long. I've been praying for a long winter like this because the last two sucked so bad. The last good winter we had was 3 years ago, and I did a bunch of trips. And then I kind of planned, or I've had planned for a couple of years now, I wanted to get out to Saginaw on the river and the bay for walleye, which I was able to do both of those. The bay was decent. The river was not great. So I took two separate trips there earlier this winter. Caught, I think, 3 or 4 walleye and then a couple catfish, which was kind of interesting. That doesn't normally happen, so that was unique. And then I went to St. Clair. I'd done really well there 3 years ago, and it was terrible this year, so that sucked. And then that was just a day trip. And then where else did I go? I've only fished local one time, and that was like last week, because I just always like to go to the destination places because they get more views on YouTube, and the fishing's pretty good at like Saginaw and stuff. So I went like local to just a public lake, and then got a 2-man limited gills and stuff with a buddy, which is fun. And then I think there was one more in there outside of last weekend's, maybe not. And then I just got back last night from going up to Burton Mullet and fishing up there. And that was probably the best trip of the year. We got 2 big walleye on tip ups. And then we got like 15 or 20, like pretty good jumbo perch, like 8 to 11 inch perch. And then caught a burbot, which we'd never done. That was our goal, to catch a burbot. And then we caught some lake trout, which was sweet. So that was the best one. Nice. I might do like maybe one more video, but I'm like, all right, I'm ready to like start scouting. And like, I'm sick of the cold and the snow.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk, like, if you were to rank like your ice fishing so far this year, like out of 1 through 10, what would you put it at for this year?
The videos have been popping. Like, that's a big reason. I do like ice fishing, but for some reason, the videos do better than my open water bass fishing. Mm-hmm. They do better than open water walleye. They do better than hunting. So I'm like, I don't have a problem driving and doing it, but it's tiring, and the fishing hasn't been great. I'd say like 6.5, somewhere in there.
Okay. So not like terrible, but also like, man, it would have been, you would think like, oh, there's a big buildup, right? Like, it's been 3 years.
That's what sucked. Oh, there was one more. I went to Cadillac, the first opening opening weekend. I remember that one.
Yep, that's the video I actually watched on YouTube. Yeah.
That was a solid day. We caught a couple, but a lot of it was like, when I went to Saginaw, my buddy had smacked him all week, and then I come over there, and it was his toughest day, like by a long shot. So that was kind of frustrating. Yep. And then we went up this past weekend for Lakers, and it was like lights out 2 weeks ago for my other buddy. And we go up, and it wasn't tough, but I wasn't able to catch one, which sucked, because I tried 3 years ago and also wasn't able to catch one. So there's little things like that, but I mean, all in all, like, the videos did well. It's always fun to go take trips with buddies, so it's, I can't complain. But like I said, it's like, it gets to end of February like this and almost March, I'm like, all right, I'm good.
You're putting some serious effort into this. I mean, it's not like you're doing one big trip. You just listed off a whole bunch of them, and you know, some serious time. I mean, going to Saginaw is no joke. Like, you know, that's a far drive. Yeah, twice. And you're doing all that long days, and then you got to throw in, like, you're just saying, like, you know, filming these things, and there's editing that goes in your videos. So, like, you're definitely going hard in the paint on this stuff.
Yep.
But I think so. I guess for me, when I watch, like, so I'm probably like a pretty good, I guess, you know, judgment on like why maybe I like ice fishing video opposed to maybe an open water video. So like when I watch guys, you know, go fish on open water, it's almost like overwhelming because they got like, maybe I don't, they got all these poles or they got all the system. And like you guys that are good at it are like so efficient and you're like just doing things that like someone like me has got no idea. But then I watch an ice fishing video. It's like, oh, this doesn't seem so bad. You drill a hole and you just do something, you know, a little more basic. Obviously there's a lot more that goes into it, but I think maybe that's why people probably really can like flock to the ice fishing. It's like, well, I 100%. Can go out there and drill a hole and, you know, jig for something or, you know, do it. And you can do it with buddies so easy. Like that's the one thing you can do easily.
Yeah. And you don't need a boat. You don't need a trailer. Like you just go out there and you can walk out if you want. You can use a hand auger. Like the barrier to entry is so much less than open water. And that's why I think the videos do so well. And a part of it is like everyone's just sitting around in the winter with nothing to do. That's a big part of it too.
Yeah. Wishing they were out there doing that.
Wishing it was summer or something else.
Yeah. I guess if you were to like give any recommendations, you know, maybe some local guys that are in this Michigan area, what are some like what your favorite like destination ice fishing you've done?
Yeah, I'd say when it's safe, Saginaw, just because like there's just nowhere like it. Like even when the fishing's tough, like it was for me this year, like it's just so sick to be able to get out on a quad or a sled and go like 5+ miles out and like just see literally like a city on the ice. There's just hundreds or probably thousands of dudes out there. It's such a cool scene. And then the water is so blue and like the ice is so clear. Like that's just my favorite place to like, they're up north, like Burton Mullet's cool too, but getting like several miles out is just like, until you do it once, it's just like crazy. You go out there and you got a beautiful sunset or sunrise and it's just awesome. Cadillac and Mitchell are normally where I go first ice, just cause those seem to get safe first. I don't love them. They're okay. But like a lot of times it just seems like kind of dinky panfish, but the pike fishing for tip ups, like is always pretty okay. Pretty decent. But I mean, that gets a couple weeks in and they have tournaments out there for ice fishing and that thing gets hammered. So that's why I always try to go like first or second weekend of ice, like around Christmas. Cause those places are normally safe.
So if you had to pick one thing to ice fish the rest of your life, what fish or what species would it be?
That's a good question. I'd say probably walleye, just because they're fun to catch, but they're like, they can be annoying. Like they're hard to catch, but I the easy cop out answer would be just like panfish, which they're fun from time to time, but like that gets old. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot of skill to catch a bunch of them.
Once you get them, you get them.
Yeah. So I'd say walleye. Now stuff like Lakers and stuff are really cool, but I mean, walleye, they're so good tasting too. Like that's a big part of it and they can get big. So it feels like a bigger fish. Like you're really fighting it rather than just burning up like a perch or a bluegill or something.
Gotcha. Yeah. There's a little bit of, so that was another thing I wanted to ask, you know, talking about that. Is there like obviously if you catch a salmon in a river or a big fish and like a big smallmouth in rocks, you got to like kind of have finesse or have like the ability to put the fish in the boat. When you like hook into like a walleye or something, is there like you get to like learn how to like get it through the ice, like get it, you know, retrieve it, because like you're using the little poles, like, you know, it just seems to me like, man, you're catching this big fish that guys in the summertime, oh, I have a pole that's like five times bigger than that, and you got this little thing and you're trying to rip it through. Is there like, I guess, is there some pointers or like some things you've had to learn? Because like for me, I'd be like, dude, I have no idea. Like I hooked on this big fish, I reeled in, like I don't know.
A lot of it is like, for starters, you got to have the right equipment. Like if you have a noodle rod, like we learned this, we try to catch Lakers with like walleye rods and we snapped it in half. Like if you don't have the right equipment, it's tough already. Yeah. Or if you don't have the right line, like if you're either too light or too heavy. But then the to your point, the trickiest thing is like when the ice is really thick and you only have a single hole and you're trying to get a fish's head through 18 inches of ice. That's the trickiest thing, because you don't want the hook catching on the bottom lip of the ice, and you don't want the line rubbing when they're going on runs. So that would be the biggest thing. Like, some guys like to like grab the line and try to pull it, but then you're going to probably break your line. So I always try to let the fish tire out before you start trying to really like get their head and rip them through the hole. But once you kind of like let them kick whatever till they're done kicking and like let their head slowly like pull up through the hole, then you can kind of like rip them up once they're in the hole. But getting their head through like 12 plus inches of ice on any bigger fish is definitely tricky. So sometimes we'll drill like double holes or triple holes, because especially if you have a big one, it's stressful. They're kicking under the ice and they're like laid sideways, and you got to get them through a hole like that. Yeah. And they're like this. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen videos. Well, it made me think about that. Wanted to ask you this, 'cause I watched Michigan Outdoors this week. They had the ice fishing and they were catching trout through the ice, and the guy had a big rainbow, and it was right at the edge, and he had it there, and the buddy grabbed it and had it for a split second, and it slipped, and then it was like gone. I was like, what happened? Like, had it, and then so maybe the line did what you said. I don't know. I was just like, what happened? He had it, and then it's gone. I'm like, stressful.
Oh,
like,
it's super stressful.
Like, you have the fish, it's right there, but you're like, you know.
And then a lot of times you have a buddy that's trying to land it, and you're like, don't freaking grab my line, or like, grab him now. Like, that's always the most stressful part. You're always yelling at your buddy, or I feel like I am, at least.
Got to have a good relationship. You got to be able to take some heat if you're ready to do that with your buddies.
It's just like a net man in a tournament. Do not miss the net.
No pressure. So we got kind of open water stuff we talked about, ice fishing.
Yeah.
Do you do any kind of like salmon fishing in the rivers, or do you, you know, kind of doing that?
Yeah, I've dabbled with it a little bit. I dabbled with steelhead a couple years ago, a little bit of salmon stuff. It always seems to be like spring or fall. And I think that's the biggest reason, is that I'm either want to be in the woods in the fall, or I want to be like turkey hunting basically in the spring, or bass fishing. I like it from time to time, but it's also seems like it's always like 20 degrees when I try to do it. And I'm like, I'm kind of set on that. So it's super fun. I like catching the fish, and sometimes I don't know, the rivers kind of have like, I don't love all the dudes and like the stereotypes that go with it. And it's the same thing as bass fishing. It can be really toxic.
Like, yeah.
Tournament fishing can be terrible, honestly. And I'd say I've had experiences with just even like name dropping like rivers, like people getting pissed about it. And I'm like, dude, it's one video isn't going to hurt this massive like Kalamazoo River. Like, it's not a secret. I get it if it's a little creek and you're name dropping it, but like, dudes are just, and then you got to deal with like shoulder to shoulder guys at the dam, or like
combat fishing. My buddy called that combat fishing. I was like, well, it's hilarious.
Exactly. So yeah, it's all right.
Yep. I think it's like anything else, right? Like even bow hunting or work day to day stuff. Like you gotta, if you're going to do something, it's kind of like who you want to surround yourself with while you're doing it. Right. Like maybe like for me, if I ever like, I got a group of people. I got a couple names that pop in my head. If I ever want to go like salmon fishing the river, like I'm going with these dudes, you know, I know their personality. I understand we're gonna have a good time no matter what happens. I'm not going to worry about them being an a-hole to anyone, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to go have fun. But then there's also a lot of people who are like, they live vicariously through how many fish they catch. Just like guys live vicariously through whatever tag they punch in the fall. Yep. And you know, you just kind of got to put yourself in that position. And especially if you're a new guy, 'cause like for me, like, driving by Grand Rapids, like seeing all those dudes fishing the river, I'm like, dude, I have zero desire to do that. Yeah, that just seems way too overwhelming for me. But then the guys like love it, you know.
Oh yeah,
and they'll catch some beautiful fish, and they're like,
the man, fishing's good.
Yeah, and they're like, we're out here doing it, and they.
I have a buddy that's just like that. I did that a little bit. I caught actually like an 11-pound walleye right there, and like some nice steelhead, and the fishing's good, but it's just like miserable. Like, you always got guys like bitching at you, or like, you're always like, it's always just, I'm like, I don't want to go fish and be next to all these dudes and worried about all these other guys.
Yep.
So I'm with you. I'm like, and I have some buddies that love it, and I'm like, I just don't get how you like it. Like, yeah, I
you're used to be
that.
Like, I'm in my boat, I'm going to go over there.
I'm not going to see anyone most of the day, or be within a couple hundred yards of anyone. Yeah.
That's cool. All right. So before we dive into whitetail hunting, I kind of want to talk about your YouTube channel here a little bit, because it's real obsession.
Yep.
And like, you've been doing this, you said you kind of started as, you know, is in high school, like kind of as fun. Yeah. And now this has become much more than just that. It's, you probably consider it a job to an extent, because like, there's a lot, you got a lot of stuff on there. has your like when you go fishing, are you to the point now where it's like, I'm not going fishing unless I got my camera with me?
That's been a struggle, honestly, over the years, because you do it so long, and a lot of times it does seem like it sucks sometimes, because you're like, if I'm going fishing, I might as well take all my stuff. So most times, yes, I do take my stuff, but then it's just a pain. You got to film intros, you got to like, it's just like all these extra things, you got to shoot all the B-roll, and that's it, just it gets sick of it. So like I'd say 2 years ago, I kind of dabbled with just like, no, at least for weeknight tournaments, I'd like, I'm not bringing a camera, I'm just gonna go fun fish, because I had to get back to like loving to fish again, because a lot of it was just like, I gotta turn my freaking GoPro on, and then when I'm in a tournament, I gotta switch out batteries when I'm trying to win this tournament. And it's, so it's a fine line, but I think I've balanced it better now that I don't fish as often now, because I've got a full-time job and married, obviously. So it's like now, and going back to the whole trip thing, I take a lot more trips with buddies than tournaments. So it's like, it's kind of fun for me to go film them now that I have good equipment with buddies. And now it's just like kind of like a trip recap that we can always go back and watch like a couple years later and laugh about. So I've kind of gotten to a better like mojo with it now. But yeah, for a while there, like it's a grind for sure. It definitely sucks. And you're like, I just want to go fun fish. But then I'm like, if I go fun fish, I know something crazy is going to happen. So I better just have a camera. So yeah.
you have the love to catch it, catch the moment.
Yeah. I just think it's an internal battle.
And I think it's fun. I love asking you a question like that, because I think a lot of guys are in that same, well, I already do all that stuff. I could easily film. I could film that. It's like, dude, until you start carrying a camera around, like I've been carrying a camera in the woods for a long time and I do not have any good videos. Like,
talk to me about that one.
It's hard. And this rabbit season, I've had a camera with me. I haven't carried a shotgun rabbit hunting. I've just had my pistols on me. And I haven't even shot a rabbit yet, because I'm like trying desperately just like learn a new camera, mess with stuff and just kind of get prepared for turkey season. And for the folks that really want to like, maybe dive into that aspect a little better and get better at it. And it's like, well, I can't get better at it until like I have to like sacrifice to get better. And 100%. Dude, it kind of sucks, man. Like you got this, all this technology, and you're like trying to catch things and the camera's not working. It's like, holy cow, this is a whole new experience.
Yeah. And then you're with buddies and you're like, hey, actually, like, hold up, let me record an intro. And like, oh, can you say that again? Like, it's just like, or like, hey, dude, it's like, stop cussing when we're catching fish. Like, just little things like that, that like, it does influence like your buddies more than you think. And like, you got to have like buddies that are cool with it. But it's like, some guys don't want to be on camera and don't want to talk, and other guys want to talk and be on camera. It's just like, it's a lot of extra steps. And like the whitetail thing for me, I tried filming even more than ever last 2 years, and it's just like, it sucks. Like, I'm hunting 60 times and I'm taking in a camera arm, a camera, mics, GoPros, all this stuff for 2 bow kills. And it's like, why do I do this? So
because we're crazy. I don't know. Like, that's the same thing. It's like so much work. Like, pick up your backpack with no camera stuff in it, and then instantly put camera stuff in. You're like, dude, I just doubled my weight. Like,
yeah, and you're hiking in plus. Half a mile, mile. Oh, so and now I'm in the boat now where I'm like, maybe I just won't film at all next hunting season and just focus on hunting. So I got to figure that one out. But for fishing, I've got it a little better, and it's a little easier for fishing because you're not freaking hiking in and like hunting. Yeah, it's not fun when you're running public and sleeping out of your truck and trying to like vlog it, like. And like when you don't kill, like I think it's fun and it's sweet when you kill, but it's like when you don't kill and you just like, this year I only shot 1 buck in gun season. Yeah. It's like I packed my thing into my bow backpack every day for 50 hunts, recorded intros every hunt, recorded B-roll most hunts, like had it on the camera arm, and it's like, oh,
that's a lot.
Yeah,
a lot.
It is a lot.
But there's a passion there, right? And I think if you're a guy that's, passionate outdoorsman and wants to do this filming thing, and you kind of like, obviously your YouTube channel has been successful. It's like this, I'm sure it's this mental battle. Like, hey, I really want to do this, because you're maybe building towards something, right? Like building towards that story or building towards that. And no, you can't explain it. I haven't even got to the point of view by any means, but just a little bit I've done, it's like, dude, these dudes are mentally tough, because I've shot like all the deer I've shot in the past 5 years. It's like, I start out strong in the year, filming. Mm-hmm. And then like, I can't, dude, $3. I've had my camera with me, but it's not on the tree. So I'm like, piss on that. I'm not putting that camera up. Yep. And then I'll shoot a deer that day. And I'm like,
yep,
I should have had my camera, you know, but that's just a mental battle you got to go through.
I hear you. Yeah. That's why this year, like I said, I was like stuck to my guns, recorded every hunt. And then, cause last year I shot $2 and same thing. I had my cameras for both of them. One, the buck started coming in and I just hit it to the side because it was like in my way, which that's a whole nother part of it. And then the other one, I had it with me in my backpack and I'm like, I kind of got in late. I don't want to mess with it. And I shot another one then. I'm like, The two times I shoot a buck, I didn't take my camera out.
Yep. That's how that goes.
It happens every time. It's terrible.
So whitetail hunting now, I've watched a couple of your videos too on that. Are you primarily a public land hunter? Did you grow up like hunting whitetails on public land?
Yeah, no, I grew up, I didn't grow up like hunting a ton. So my dad was more into hunting than fishing. So he hunted a lot, but it was like a thing where we had one permission spot. We never owned land till like 3 years ago. We had one permission spot of like ag land of like 30 acres, probably like 10 woods. And it like was a bacon strip land that butted up into 9 other properties. And it was like, don't go out there opening day. You're going to get shot. Like no bucks, like the typical Michigan, like there, it's hard to even see a decent buck out there. So like, That's how I grew up, pretty much just doe hunting, honestly. And it's like, I got into that when I was really young and like my dad had me in my own tree stand when I was like 8 or 9, which was nuts. But so I did it as a young age, but it was like, oh, if I saw a 4-point, that'd be a good hunt. Like just never, ever saw a big buck. So it kind of worked out. Cause then I just learned with like doe is pretty much and like would like had your fair share of mess ups when you start bow hunting on your own at 9, like wounding, missing, everything. And so we just grew up basically hunting that one permission spot and then had a couple other permission spots throughout the years. And I'd never hunted public until like high school, started watching THP and like Seek One. Those are my two favorite groups. And then got into that a little bit, but like that was like I had no idea. Same thing with fishing, like literally no idea what I was doing. Didn't see deer for like the first 2 years of doing it. And then like over time I kind of got good, like not good, but I started finally figuring out 2022, I think I doubled up in Michigan like October 7th and I was like, okay, perfect. I'm just going to go to Indiana, just force myself to go do it. Mm-hmm. And then I went down there, ended up scouting it in like October, didn't see anything, went back down for the rut and then wounded back to back good deer, which sucked, lost both of those. But it's like, I finally, like you kind of just got to jump in. And then since then, that's really primarily what I hunt now. I got a couple permission spots, but like I'd say it's probably 50-50 of public and just private. Now we have a piece up in Ludington, like a 20 acre piece, which is nice, but same thing there, like tons of does, but like it's hard to even see 100 inch buck up there. So it's a fine line. My biggest thing is I like going out of state so much because you go up across the border and it's like the quality just skyrockets. I'm sure you know that.
Whole new world. Yes.
Yeah. So I don't love Michigan public hunting, but like Ohio, Indiana, anywhere else, Kentucky, like those are fun. Those are a lot of fun.
Good deal. Yeah. I think a lot of guys who've experienced hunting out of state can relate to that. But I think it's kind of interesting. You know, you talked about how it seems like you're, or maybe we touched on this briefly before we started recording, but you were so like fishing focused, like that was like your thing for so long. And like the fishing passion is still there, but then it's like morphed into like this different. And now whitetail hunting is like expanding in your year to year, I guess, enjoyment.
Yeah.
Outside. And has your fishing, it's one of those things where like you got to have passion and you like guys who like to golf or do anything sport wise. It's like once you make it a job, it takes a little bit away from it.
Yep.
Do you think having like hunting involved in that and your fishing, like you have a good balance right now? Like you can spend enough time doing this fishing thing that you really like, but then fall rolls around. It's like, oh, I got this whole new passion.
Yeah.
Hard reset. I can now focus on something else.
Exactly. And, yeah. I like you said, I lean definitely more hunting than fishing, but that's just because of like, social media and tournaments and everything just kind of put a bad taste in my mouth for fishing. The fishing community as a whole just like kind of sucks, honestly. Like just between tournaments and socials, like those are
throw money in the mix too, right?
It's like
there's money at
the politics of it just gets old, and that's where I like hunting with buddies, but so much of my hunts are just I'm going out on my own, I'm doing it on my own at my own pace. I do it when I want, where I want, how I want it. I'm not competing as much. And again, it's just like competitive drive. Like I want to go do it. I go sleep out of my truck, like out of state, because I really want to kill big deer and I haven't killed many big deer yet. And so And I think having, like you said, like the seasonal aspect of it is huge, because it's like, okay, by the end of summer, I'm sick of bass fishing, and I'm like, okay, sweet, I got a little bit of salmon, and then I got all fall, and I'm gonna grind. But by December, January, I'm really sick of hunting most years, and it's like, sweet, can't wait to ice fish and then bass fish. So it's a perfect cycle here in Michigan. Yeah. If I just like fished year round like the southern boys, I think I go crazy.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you know, that's what you hear about. Like, guys will play golf. You know, if they're really competitive in the golf game or baseball or any sports, mm-hmm. they literally do it the entire year. And it's like, I'm sure there's those crazy guys out there, but eventually there's going to be a burnout. And like, how are you going to handle that burnout? And I think for you, like obviously I haven't watched all your videos, but I watched some more recent ones. And dude, that Cadillac ice fish thing. Like, like you said, you didn't have like the greatest day ice fishing, but dude, I was like, dude, this is awesome. Like, this dude's having a good time. He's with some buddies. And like, I think that's important. So like, kind of bring this up for like anyone who maybe, you know, wants to maybe dabble into competitive fishing or anything like that. You gotta like be in the right mental space. And you know, you went hard in the paint for a really long time, learned a lot, got really good, but you're still like, even though you might not be so into the competitive fishing as you used to be, you're still finding a lot of fun. You've turned that passion into something, and you know, it's constantly evolving, and which I think is cool, because like I always feel bad when you hear like you see these stories, you know, pop up on Facebook or whatever, like, yeah, I haven't hunted in like 10 years, but I'm getting back into it. And it's like, well, what happened, man? Like,
dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, what happened? Like, and maybe because something came up family wise, or maybe you like realized that I was going too hard, my family was suffering. But if you can find that balance, dude, there's nothing better. Like, there's nothing better at all.
Totally feel you.
So, do you have any like goals, I guess, going here into 2025? And like, we can kind of do like fishing goals and deer hunting goals.
So ice fishing season was so good that I already hit, well, I'm like 10 subs off of my goal, which was like, I think it was to grow at 2,500 subs, which on the last 2 years I've grown at like 1,000 to 2,000 subs like a year. And then I already in a month and a half of, or 2 months, have hit that goal. So that's sweet, because the ice fishing videos are really popping. And then hunting, I want to shoot one really good deer. I don't care where. That was my goal this past year. Didn't happen. It was probably my toughest hunting season, which just like fuels even more. So I just want to shoot a 130. I don't care where. I don't care if I don't kill one in Michigan. Like, I want to kill one real good deer. Had like I said, I hit a couple in Indiana that 1 year that were both that big and lost both of those. Missed a different deer in a different state that was like gargantuan, different size. Like, so it's been like 2 or 3 years now. Like, I'll kill a couple like decent, like last year or 2 years ago, I had a good year in Michigan. I killed like 110 inch 3 year old in Michigan, which is like a great deer. And then I killed another 100, 105 inch deer at my cottage up north, which is like great deer, fun. But it's like, I've killed so many like 90 to 100 inch deer. Like, I just want to grind for a big one. So like, that's just my one goal, is shoot a 130.
That's a good goal. That's like it's achievable, right? Like, I think it's cool. Like, you have an achievable goal, and I can like relay. I was probably, from the age I was 22 to 27. Like, I was like, I'm shooting a 3 year old buck. Like, I really want to do that. And it took me some years, right? Like, it took me a time, but man, that like a perfect time to figure that out, right? Like, you're younger, you know, you got that. You maybe, I don't know if you have any kids yet or anything, but it sounds like you're recently married. So like, take advantage of this time and like really invest like heavy in that. So then as you get into your 30s, you can still like, you know, fall back on all that information, which I think is exactly what you did fishing, right? You just invested crazy amount of time, learned it when you're young, and now you can just always fall back on that, you know, have a lot of fun. Have you done any like applying to different states? Like, have you tried to go to Kansas or Iowa? Have you gotten to that yet?
I haven't. I dabbled and actually filmed an elk hunt for American Archer with Joe Thomas. So I did that last year. I'd never been out west, and that was like, holy cow. So really? I'm sure that's in my future at some point, like for archery elk, but probably, and my dad's 55. So I want to do that in the next 5 years. So that'd be probably my big trip. I haven't applied for any whitetail states just because like I've got on some decent deer out of state, and it's like, I just want to kill a couple 130s or 140s or even 150s. Like, I don't need to go for like freak giants yet. And that's where I'm like, okay, Ohio, Indiana, they're close, they're cheap, they're easy. Like I can just bust down there for a weekend. So not yet, but hopefully once I get a buck or two, like a good one under my belt, then I definitely want to go hunt like Kansas. And I did Missouri. I guess we used to have a lease down there. Probably 5 years ago. But again, that was like when I didn't really love hunting, which sucks because like I had a couple really good opportunities with my dad to get on really big deer. And I just went down for like 2 weekends and like would sit out of a shooting shack and like not really try. So that sucks. But now it's like then I got into my 2 or 3 year period of just like grinding around home and like kind of doing it all on my own in public and stuff. And so now I'm like, yeah, I got back hunting with my dad a lot more. So I want to do more trips with him. I took him down to Indiana with me and we went to some public I'd learned and he shot a nice one, so that was sweet. So definitely want to do some more trips, but the whole out west elk thing will have to happen at some point.
That's a bad bug. I feel like once I get bit by that, it's gonna
Have you been out west for that?
I've been out, I shot a black bear out west in Wyoming in the spring and just like was in the mountain setting when I did that, and I could have stayed. Like it was like I can just live here fine. I'll bum it for, I don't care how long, like I don't want to go back home. And then, so I haven't done that just because I got some whitetail stuff I kind of want to do. And I'm kind of, I'm waiting for the little man to get a little older. Cause I kind of want to start, like, I want him to kind of follow me along with that journey almost, like, cause like you only get so much time. It's like, well, I already do whitetail stuff, but if I can have like a trip a year where I take the whole family and I think like elk hunting or mule deer hunting can kind of be that thing. So that's kind of what I want to do there. Nice. And then I was going to ask you too, like when you're doing, cause you know, this out of state thing has been kind of newer for you. Are you doing like scouting trips, at all when you go out of state, before you go hunting? I mean, do you go in the spring maybe, or what is that for you?
I, whenever like, and that's a weird thing too. I love scouting like almost more than fishing. Like it's just amazing. It's like, you're just like setting yourself up for success. So I'd never really scouted till probably 2 years ago. And then I went really hard last year and it's like, it's just game changer. Like as soon as that snow comes off. So I went down to Indiana and scouted a couple pieces that we ended up killing off of. That was the same piece that I hit those 2 bucks off of. So I had in season scouted that, and then some stuff in Ohio I've been down to a couple times, and it makes it so much more worth your time to just get down there and have stuff in mind. Like that's the biggest thing I think with guys that aren't super big into hunting. It's like, well, why would you do that in April? Like that's stupid, that's a waste of time. It's like, dude, you have no idea how much it's going to help you, rather than stumbling around in the woods all fall trying to come across something. You'd be like, oh, I'll just go to the biggest scrape I found on this entire block.
And
I think I like scouting.
And you have a whole year, right? And you, instead of trying to do everything in a 2 week period, you know, because I think 2 weeks is about how, if you weekend warrior it up, you have like 2 weeks of hunting probably a year, give or take, right? Maybe a little more or a little less. But if you like can sprinkle scouting in throughout these other months of the year, all that's going to do is make you have at least, I mean, it might not be a year, like you seem to have really good success, like literally the next year. It might take you like a year or two or three of scouting to like really find those right pockets. Yeah. And then you have like really good hunts. And it's just, it's like that. Once you get in the mindset of like thinking about hunting more often, right? Like it helps you, like maybe when you're watching a YouTube video, you hear something and it's like, holy cow, I just seen that last week when I was out scouting, or like all these little things. And that's like, that's why we're all crazy in love.
It's addicting.
It's like, the process is the best.
Yeah. Sure. That's where, like growing up, like I said, we just went to the one tiny little permission spot and it was literally so small that it's like, you don't even have choices. It's like, we had three stands there. They were 60 yards apart. Yeah. And so there was never any game planning or any strategy, never scouted, like never stepped foot on there outside of deer season, because it was just small. And it's like, you just sit in the same spot. And that's where like getting out and like getting my own permission spots and then running public was like, that's what's so addicting, as hard as it is. Like, it's just a giant puzzle. It's always changing. You're always trying to put it together. I'm competitive because I want to like do well. And you have the other hunting pressure. And it's just, it's nuts. Like, and the scouting thing from last year was the first year I went hard with it. And I didn't like directly benefit off of it per se. Like I didn't kill off any of the spots, but a lot of it was just like, I ran cameras for a good portion of the year, the whole year, off those areas or those scrapes or whatever I found that I liked. And like, I probably should have hunted them because then I pulled them this fall afterwards and I'm like, oh, those were pretty decent. Or some sucked. And it's like, okay, I know I'm going to just leave that or maybe check it once next fall and like just re-put my focus down out of state or somewhere around home or something. So,
yep, you're lured in the woods just like you learned those lakes in high school and college, man. You're just finding all little spots and you can, you know, it's kind of cool because, okay, sometimes hard work doesn't always equal success in the woods, which I'm sure is the same thing in the fishing realm of things. Like you could be probably like put the most amount of time and effort and have all this stuff and maybe just isn't your day, right? Like the fit or you go to Saginaw, it's just not a good day. Your buddy's playing before, like that does happen. But if you do it enough, there is like you can feel good at, like at the end of the day, like for me, like the end of a year, right? I didn't shoot a buck in Michigan this year. But when my season came to a close, I was okay with that because I knew that I learned a lot. I was in the right position on different things. It just didn't quite shake out. So like I can kind of like end the year on like understand like, hey, I put forth like a good amount of effort. Going into 2025, do I want to do a couple things different to like expand on that? Absolutely. But instead of being like just pissed the whole time, like, oh my gosh, it's like I should have done this. I failed because I didn't put enough effort into it. Like I never want to have that mindset. And I think that's it takes time to learn. Like if you're new, you don't even know what that means, right? Like it's like you have no idea. But being able to work hard and be, you know, focused on it and try to learn, and then they're just like in the hunting, and I'm sure fishing's the same way because there's so many different species of fish. It's like I can kind of feel like, well, I want to get good at catching bluegills. And then I like catching largemouth bass because you can top water them or, you know, throw a plastic worm out there and it's fun and it's kind of like relatively easy.
Yeah.
Now it's like, well, it would be kind of fun to maybe catch some other kind of fish or like go into a river and catch like fish in the river, which I would have zero experience in. So I think climbing the ladder and fishing and hunting are some really good parallels.
Yeah. Like you said, if you're able to set up like, oh, I don't always need to go out and get a video out of this fishing trip, which that's been a struggle. Like if I don't film, I'm like, dang, I'm not going to like did all this stuff, shot it all, drove all the way up here. And I'm not even going to have enough for a video, like get pissed about that. Or like hunting, like I'm still not good at it, but like, I was really bad a couple of years ago. It's like, I just want to kill deer. Like I just want to shoot bucks. And it's like, that's not how, like, if you have that mindset, you're just pissed all season. And if you mess up or miss, or just don't have a chance, like I had this year, it's like, you got to be okay with that and have those goals. Like you said, like I was in the right area. Like I learned stuff. I had a good year, but I was so like, just, I need to see results and directly killing deer. Like, like there's so much along the way. You got to just like hit attainable goals, like just like learn pieces or like, yeah, like you said, fishing, just like go out and like learn new bodies of water. It doesn't always need to be, oh, I need to go catch a giant bass or like go win this tournament or shoot a giant buck. Like, got to enjoy the process, because otherwise like I'd beat myself up a lot of times when I couldn't get a video or like a couple of rough years of hunting. Like you can beat yourself up if you're not careful with it.
Oh, for sure. And get depressed. Like you can
And like kind of start to hate it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
for sure.
Okay. So I have a couple questions that are popping in my head. Let's see here. Let's kind of do like a social media thing or YouTube videos. Someone other than your channel, who would you recommend? Maybe a couple channels you really like for, you know, fishing content. Maybe that can be, you can take this any way you want, like super experienced guys or maybe like beginner stuff. Is there anyone you can recommend for some people that they can go check out?
Yeah, going back to like how I started filming, it was like the Guggen Squad, but kind of before that was a thing. If you watch them, I still to this day like John B. He's a couple of years older than me. He's like one of the biggest guys on YouTube. That's who I was watching. That was like, I'm just gonna start trying to fish more and film more. And so I've always loved him. Some of the other guys in the group I don't really care for anymore at all, but I still like watching John B. He's funny. He's a good fisherman and films really like good cinematic production. So. Enjoy his work still. And then a guy in Michigan that puts out good stuff is Ben Nowak. His stuff is super educational. Like he's a hammer. He can catch them. And like, so I watched his stuff when I was like taking in all that content and trying to get good in college and high school. Like I watched a lot of his because he has a lot of great tips and educational stuff, along with a different, bigger, much bigger channel called Tactical Bassin. That has like every tip known to mankind on every lure, like every rod and reel. I watched the crap out of that stuff when I was trying to get good. But yeah, I mean, I have a couple buddies that like film with me, and like one of them is now covering the Elite Series guys on like the high end professional tournaments. Ooh. His name's Henry Schenkel. His like channel is Cubed Media. So I've done some really cool projects with him. But yeah, it's just fun. It's nice. A good time.
All right. Yeah. So that's some good fishing stuff. Like give us some, like, you know, he's whitetail hunting is kind of a little bit more recent, right? Like learning, yeah. You already talked about like THP and Seek One. Is there any other kind of channels that you feel like you've learned a lot? For the hunting?
I'm trying to think of the guy's name. He's I just started watching him last year. I think he's out of Minnesota or Wisconsin. He does a lot of like the analytical, like these are the best days, like based off a lot of his trail camera stuff. Like he's not very big yet, but okay. He's had a couple of videos that like are just pretty educational and like similar ish hunting, like big woods. I'm thinking like Manistee National, like, cause I hunted a lot of that, and that stuff's hard, man. Like there's just not much stuff like that. Another one, I love Dan Infault, like just cause it's very relatable to like, that's, I don't care so much for like, a lot of the THP stuff isn't relevant for me because I'm not hunting the hills, you know what I mean? Or I'm not out west yet, but it's like at some point it will be. But Dan Infold is like very much about Michigan a lot of the times, and swamps and islands and all that stuff. And then I love what's his name, Andy May. I love listening to him talk. He's probably my favorite dude to just like, if I see a podcast with him, I'm gonna watch everyone.
Yeah, he seems that like a good dude is
he's a killer.
Yes,
that's what I aspire to be. That's where I'm like, if I can just like, well, I have the time, like just keep learning and keep getting better so that someday I don't need to hunt 60 times a year. You know what I mean? And just like go hunt a dozen times and still have some degree of success. Obviously not like him, but like,
yeah,
just like the more you do it, the more efficient you can be.
Like he's just going to roll in. He's just going to roll out west for like 3 days and shoot a hammer mule deer.
Yeah,
and then then 2 weeks later, he'll be in Ohio or Michigan and shoot a freaking stud. It's like, dude, like this.
He's mental. I love listening to him talk.
Yep. And then, yeah, Dan Infault, like he was the reason I am the hunter I am today is because once I caught wind of his stuff and like listened to him, granted, I don't hunt the same stuff he does, right? But how he breaks things down, how he like talks about hunting deer is very relatable. Like once you understand the mindset, like granted, yes, maybe you don't hunt like a big swamp area, but it's still like the basics are there. And the whole like in season scouting thing, like I was like, when I first heard him talk about how often he did that, I really like gut checked myself. And it's like, I'm not having the hunts I want. Maybe it's because I don't even know what's going on around me. And just doing little loops and little walk, like that was, I can credit Dan Infault for some of those things. And then just like understanding like what deer bedding looks like, instead of being like, oh, I see deer come from here, so that must be the bedding area. It's like, well, no, the bedding area is actually like another like 300 yards, you know, like those kind of things. So like those are really good. Yeah, those are some solid guys right there.
Yeah, I know. Though I'd say the two I listen to most is, like I said, Andy, if I ever hear anything, and then I like Dan's stuff. He's a little goofy. Like sometimes I'm like, dude, just like chill out. Like, like I know you've hunted forever and you're a goat, but like, all right, like chill out, Dan. But yeah, I anything that's like really relatable. I have a hard time like listening to guys out west, or if it's like down like really big hill stuff. It's like, I just, and even big ag stuff, like I don't hunt a ton of it. It's a lot of like I hunt a little bit of swamps and like ravines and just like creek bottoms and big woods too. So that's where it's like some of the guys in like Minnesota, Wisconsin, a lot of their content is more relatable.
Yep, so. Absolutely. All right. Yeah. So now I want to kind of go to gear. Is there anything new gear wise you got recently in the fishing space that you'd be like, hey, I bought this and it was sweet. Like this is like you could like recommend.
I'd say forward facing sonar is just insane. Like if you haven't fished with it, like, I took my dad and his buddy, and like they fished their whole lives and caught a bunch of fish, but like until you go see that and like see someone catch him with forward facing and you're like, all right, he's gonna eat it in like 3 seconds, watch this, like it's just mind-blowing. I remember the first couple times seeing it, and like you watch your bait like come over this fish's head and you watch the fish react, is like that's insane. But obviously you kind of have to have a boat and like a setup for that, so that's a tough one. I guess kind of similarly, like if you've never used AquaView ice fishing, it's just a little camera you like drop down. That's super fun because you can like, whether it's bluegill, bass, walleye, whatever, you can just see what's going on live time. Mm. Anything that's like visual, like I enjoy any sort of like visual technology.
Nice. Now let's roll that into the hunting space. Hunting wise, anything recently you've bought that's kind of like, feel like was like, man, it'd be that maybe a different bow or mobile hunting equipment.
Yeah. Or anything I've, like I've that? Ro- I've rocked with the old bow, old-ish. Like, I've never had a nice new bow ever, just because I've always basically used my dad's hand-me-down, which, okay. Like, he's always run Hoyt, so, like, he'll normally run a bow for, like, 5 years and, like, give it to me or sell it to me for cheap. So, I'm running, I think it's the Factor 34. I bet it's, like, 12 years old now, mm-hmm. So I've been thinking about upgrading the last couple of years, so I can't really speak to that. I've been shooting newer arrows, which I think helps, but I'm definitely not, like, the best archer ever either. So I would say the biggest one is just, like, well, I'd say two things. Cell cams have, like, just taught me a ton and, like, helped me. I've directly killed deer because of them. Like, my good one in Michigan 2 years ago, like, I was down in Ohio or Indiana, and, like, it was just crappy. Like, it wasn't going on, and then, like, all of a sudden, like, 2-3 days in a row, like, who would have thought November 4, 5, 6, there's bucks, like, in my spot, in my permission spot. So I'm like, I'm just going to cancel my plans, come home early. And then I knew there was a buck in there in daylight the day before. I'm like, there's got to be a hot doe in there. So I went in there and killed that next morning. So it's like cell cam. And then the biggest thing is, like, just mobile hunting altogether. Like I said, I grew up hunting. We'd have three stands on a 20 acre piece and you just sit whatever one you wanted. Never thought about wind, never thought about moving or anything. So, like, just mobile sticks and a saddle have, like, that's all I hunt now. I don't sit out of tree stands, and it's like, it is kind of true that it's kind of like a cliche. Like, I don't know, you could say, like, it's kind of a cult, but it's I have the energy and the time to do it right now. And I love, like, being on your feet, and sometimes it sucks by the end of the year, you're sick of it, but it's so cool to, like, go out and explore and, like, just be able to, like, hunt wherever you want, whenever you want.
Yep.
So I'd say that's a big one.
Dude, I love having mobile. Like, I have a saddle, have the hang on, you know, I got options, and that really, it's not like it makes or help, like, you're not going to kill deer solely because you do that. It just puts you in like, how they call it, like, it puts you in uncomfortable situations. So, like, kind of forces your hand, right? Like, all right, I got to take this thing down and I got to go somewhere tomorrow. And, like, where am I going to go? And you're out there constantly thinking about it. You can't just like, oh, I'll just go to Old Faithful, or I'm just going to take it easy today. Like, no, you, like, legitimately have to put some effort into this. And sometimes you, like, dude, some of my best hunts are, it's like, dude, I never would have thought that would have worked. And then, you know, you try it because you kind of have to. And it's like, holy crap, it worked, because you know, maybe the sign is there, or what you see from a hunt before. And you're like, well, shoot, they were over there 50 yards. I'm going over there, and holy crap, here they are. You know, like, I love mobile hunting. That would be, like, my thing. Like, I think if you're a guy that, like, you know, like you just said, I think a lot, like, I kind of grew up that way. Like, everyone had their own spots, and we had the same trees, and you hunted them. And it was like, man, you know, on a west wind, we see a lot of deer over there. Let's go sit on that, you know, that tree. And you'd blow half of them out because they're smelling you, but you saw a deer, you know?
Right.
So I think a lot of guys, especially Michigan or the high pressure states, can relate to that. And if you want to, like, if you're kind of sick of that, you're kind of like, don't spend your money on a new bow. You save that money up and get a mobile setup, because that will pay off. I mean, you're rocking, dude. That Hoyt Factor bow, dude. So many people love that bow when it came out. Like, oh yeah, like, I remember when that bow was out. I was trying to think of the first new bow I bought. The first new bow I bought was a Vector 35. Okay. So I think that was a little bit newer. Or around that same time that Factor came out. And I remember seeing them. Yeah, like, dude, when that bow came out, it was it. So, like, who cares if it's 12 years? You know what I mean?
Oh, and that's the thing.
Kills, like, deer and can still fling an arrow.
Yeah, and I get it for, like, guys that are much better than me. But, like, I've never had the time to, like, get really, really good and, like shoot, like, every day. Like, I haven't. I've gotten better to where I shoot more and, like, shot deer out to 45, 50 yards. But it's like, I think it's because I fish so much too, and I have all these other things that I like to do. So I'm like, I'm okay with not being anywhere near, like, one of the better archers, but it's like, if I can just put in my reps, like, that's where I'm like, I don't need a brand new bow. Like, it's going to be me more than the bow, and, like, the bow's fine. Like, would I maybe be a touch better? Sure. Like, but
I'm going to call what's going to happen to you. You're going to, this is your whitetail experience here. You're going to get to the point here in the next couple of years where you're, like, learning, right? Like, you're trying to find these deer, and you're get to the point where you're going to consistently find bigger deer you want to shoot. And then you're going to be like, okay, I've checked this box. I can find them. Now it's like, okay, when I do get an opportunity, I want it to be as good as possible. And you're going to justify a new bow.
Oh, as soon as I start making more money, that's the biggest thing. Like, I just bought a house, but
That's how it always goes. Like, everyone's like, mm-hmm. I don't need nothing. And then once you like kind of cross that list of, hey, because that's what happened to me. Like, when I was in my journey of sucking, right? Like, I couldn't get a big deer to get in front of me for the life of me. Once I started doing it, and then you maybe kill one, and then maybe you miss one the next year. It's like consistently seeing them. It's like, all right, this bow is the issue. I need to now like upgrade that. Like, this is what us men do, right? Like,
oh yeah,
you know, that's what it's fun. So yeah, I you know, I'm gonna call it here in the next couple of years. I can see a new bow.
Okay. I like that. I had something kind of similar to that. Like, I went. And this again is just me being an idiot, but it's like I shot rages like just all growing up because like those were the easiest things. I didn't have to like tune my bow, and my bow's old, like all those factors. I don't shoot it as much as I should. And then I started like, I watched, I don't even know who it was, I think it was Seek One, and then I started shooting the Exodus, the QAD.
Yeah.
And like I shot that for like 2 years, and I didn't even like paper tune my bow. So I'm that's how dumb it is. So dude, I missed and wounded probably like 3 decent deer, and I was like, I don't know how, but I never put it together. And I'm like missed bad, like past his head, like how did that happen? Like, I'm not that bad. Like, and then I finally got to the point, like I was like, well, I should probably paper tune it. And then I went in and they had a hard time doing that, and I'm like, I'm just gonna go back to what works for me. Again, it's just a confidence thing. And then the second I go back, I shoot like 3 bucks in a row, and it's like, I don't know if it's me, the bow, paper tuning, just the confidence in general. I'm like, I'm just sticking with what works for me.
And like I don't think there's anything wrong with, like, I mean, I think it's awesome how transparent you've been this whole episode with all this stuff. But like someone like me, it's like, I laugh because, dude, I was in the exact same shoes as you. Like, I had no idea. Like, I was like, what do you, like, same thing. Like, I would shoot these, you know, I shoot mechanicals because that was the thing to do.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, you get maybe different arrows because you finally broke all these other arrows. And it's like,
right,
what's going on? And then once I finally, like, and the only reason I think I really learned about it was because of listening to podcasts or videos like you were talking about right now. I think that's what's powerful about this long format stuff. And like, it really, like, I was not that long ago that like I learned about FOC and, you know, different arrow weights and like how to get an arrow to shoot well with my specific bow. And dude, once I figured that stuff out, it's like, I've had nothing but like, you know, way better success, like, in the woods, and like you said, confidence. And it's like, dude, you don't even, like, there's so many little things you don't know about. And I think it's cool hearing you talk about that, because you can be off dramatically if your arrows aren't flying like straight. And I can
especially
believe,
especially if you're not even paper tuning it.
Yep, you can do that. So, but yeah, I think this conversation has been great. I really appreciate you doing this. Is there anything else you want to bring up before we kind of close this thing out?
I don't think so. Thanks for having me on. I could talk a lot more hunting and fishing. So let me know.
I know. Well, you'll be on again. The only reason I'm kind of cutting a little short is I got a bunch of work I got to get done yet tonight.
I hear you. Yeah. I just looked down. It's almost 10.
Yeah. It's like, it's Monday, and it's like, it was a Monday of all Mondays today for me at the day job stuff. But no, dude, great conversation. I, like I said, anyone who's, you know, in the cabin fever or like wanting to see about ice finish stuff, like, your videos are great on YouTube, especially if you're like a West Michigan guy, you're local to all of us. I mean, I think it's pretty cool to do that. And it's just hilarious to me how social media works, right? Like, just randomly scrolling through YouTube, and it's like, boom, oh, who's this dude? I'm like, oh, I know that lake. And then I like do a little thing, like, oh, he's like, lives kind of close. And then you like live closer than I even thought you live. I'm like, dude, this is nuts. So,
what one point to that, real quick, and we'll wrap it up. Like, it's such a, like, I was kind of dissing on socials, and I am kind of sick of them, just because like I used to do social media like for my job before that, which made me really hate it. But like, some of my best buds, like fishing buds, are like literally like JM, for example, who I like fish a ton with. Like, he just DM'd me one day. He's like, hey, I saw you were out on Muskegon. Like, I've been out there. Like, could you help me out or something? Then we started fishing together. Like, I've met a lot of my buddies, or just like had random people reach out and like become acquaintances or like buddies because of like YouTube or Instagram. So it is cool. There's cool parts about it.
But like anything, it's all where the channel goes, right? Like, where you are headspace wise, where you are with that. Like, we talked about earlier, like, you could make, you're gonna, like, you, it's up to you, right? You can be pissed off all year because you're not punching tags, or pissed off that your videos aren't, you know, you're not catching fish in your videos. It all comes down to just being grounded and just like slowing it down and being like, hey, we're all that little kid still that loves being out here and getting after it. So
exactly. All right. Gotta enjoy the whole process.
All right. Let's wrap it up on that before we ruin this little end segment here. But dude, appreciate it. Hopefully you catch a couple more fish here. I mean, there's,
It's gonna might go warm, out for though. One more sesh.
We'll yeah, see. It's like 40 today, so you better get out there quick. All right, dude. Yeah. Appreciate it. Everyone else, thank you for listening. Go give his page a follow. Thank you for all the downloads and all the support. And you guys know what to do this week. Get out there.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.